Hello, and welcome to the Dr. Nurse Mama Show, prescribing hope for healthy families here on American Family Radio. Here's your host, Professor, Pediatric Nurse Practitioner, and Mom of Four, Dr. Jessica Peck.
Well, hey there, friends, and welcome to my favorite part of the afternoon, getting to spend time with you. Hello, friends. It is Friday, or Fri-yay, as my kids say. It is Friday, and I hope that whatever you have planned this weekend, that you have something fun planned with family. Listen, in a world that is filled with all kinds of stress, we need to have some fun. We need some levity. We need some laughter, because we're dealing with some heavy things. And you know what? Today, I'm going to be answering questions. It is Ask Dr. Nurse Mama Friday, and I'm going to be answering some questions about a kind of heavy topic, and that is forgiveness. I've had a lot of emails and inquiries and conversations with families who are just in a season of conflict. It feels like there's a lot of stress going on right now. A lot of families are feeling financial pressures of how are we going to feed our families. And there are a lot of families who have a lot of social and relational pressures, a lot of academic pressures for their kids. Maybe it's sports pressures. And anytime you put your family in that kind of pressure cooker, and let's add all of the cultural pressure that's going on right now in the middle of an unprecedented, which I know we all hate that word now, but an unprecedented presidential election cycle. We have all kinds of geopolitical conflict. It just feels like everyone is on edge. And when we're on edge, we can tend to be more irritable. We can tend to be just, you know, that conflict is so easy to come. So I'm going to answer some questions today about how to navigate family conflict. And we're going to start out by talking about this week's healthy habit. Now, I am focusing on and meditating on the verse that comes from Ephesians chapter 4, verse 32. Be kind to one another, tender-hearted, forgiving one another as God in Christ forgave you. So many times we can get so irritated or so offended or so hurt, and sometimes those things are genuinely so, by something that someone else has done. But there is a reason that we are told to take the speck out of our own, the log out of our own eye before we look at the speck in someone else's eye. So today I want to talk about being forgiving and forgiving one another. Today I'm going to talk about that in the context of family relationships. Now, this may be husband-wife, this may be parent-child, and I'll start off by talking a lot about that because it is kind of controversial. What do we apologize to our kids? How much do we apologize to our kids? When do we apologize to our kids? And as with everything, there is a balance here. There is, you can go too far one way and be overly apologetic, and you can go too far the other way and not apologize at all. And some of this is a little bit generational. Older generations tended to be, hey, we're the parents, we're never wrong. I know that I certainly experienced that kind of generational difference where parents, it wasn't really customary for parents to apologize. But there is, we are biblically commanded to apologize to each other. If we're looking at that verse in Ephesians 4, 32, it says, be kind to one another, tenderhearted, forgiving one another. Sometimes it's our kids that we need to forgive, and sometimes they need to forgive us. Sometimes that may be another family relationship. But apologizing is so important, and it is a spiritual discipline as well as a relationship builder, because apologizing really starts that process of healing. It helps the person who was hurt or offended to feel understood, and it fosters connection so that we can be connected because we are seeing and recognizing that human experience that we are having, and especially with our kids. As parents, we are going to make mistakes. We do make mistakes on a daily basis, and it doesn't matter if your kids are toddlers or teens or grown. We mess up, and it's important to acknowledge that when we mess up so that we can improve and show up in a better way in our relationships. Now, listen, I think that apologizing in today's culture for our kids is even a more important spiritual discipline because we are living in the world of cancel culture. Now, cancel culture tells our kids, you make one mistake and you're canceled. That's it. You're out for life. You are socially ostracized. There is no way back. You wear a label forever. And that kind of perpetuates on social media. So I think it's really important for us to demonstrate that it is expected in the human experience to mess up. You will fall. You will fail. You will sin. You will make terrible choices. All of us do. But what is the way that we can restore that and make that right? And if you as a parent set that tone in your home for healthy apologies, it really is going to help you build relationships with your kids and also show them that messing up is not always the end of the world, especially over things that are minor. As a nurse practitioner, I'm seeing kids all the time who make really minor mistakes. I'm not talking about big mistakes that are life-altering. I'm talking about saying something unkind to a friend, and they think their life is over. Now, kids are not designed to think long-term. Their brain doesn't work in that way. And so they only see tomorrow at school as long-term. Like, that's way in the future tomorrow. And how am I going to go back to school? And how am I going to sit at the lunch table? So it's important. Now, why is it so hard for us to apologize at times? Well, this is pretty complicated. Sometimes it depends on how we grew up. If we grew up in a home where apologizing was just not done, if it was seen as a weakness or a personal flaw, then we just didn't learn to do it. And it's not that we're intentionally not apologizing. We just don't have that built in as a spiritual discipline to us. It doesn't come easy. And sometimes we grow up with trauma. Sometimes you may grow up in a family where you have to perform to be loved, or you feel like you've got to be perfect all of the time, and you have this perfection complex. And if you're not perfect, then you won't be loved. So therefore, I cannot admit that I'm wrong, because that means I'm not perfect. That means I'm not worthy of love. Now, when I say it out loud like that, it really sounds ridiculous. But this is something I struggled with, especially as a firstborn, a perfectionist, really, really hard. So shout out to my husband, who has grown with me as I've learned that it is okay to apologize. It is okay to admit my weakness. They're known already. But sometimes, you know, it's just hard to admit when we're wrong because it threatens how we feel about each other. Now, some parents feel like that threatens their power, that they're going to be seen as weak, our kids won't respect us. But I would say that if you apologize in a healthy way, your kids will not only see you, will not see you as weak, they will actually see you as quite strong, because it takes a lot of character and strength to admit that you're wrong. Now, I will say that my experience with my kids and with most other kids is that generally my kids are much more forgiving than I am. So if my husband and I are bickering back and forth, I will hear my kids just say, "Mom, you're wrong. Just say you're sorry." Now, of course, you know, we have to train them to speak to us in a respectful way. And I'm not saying that they did or they didn't. Sometimes it was and sometimes it wasn't. But it didn't change the fact that they were right, that I was just being stubborn. Or same goes for my husband at times. But it's important for us to normalize in our families that it is okay to make mistakes, and it's more than okay to admit to those mistakes. And that is really going to be important in our relationships, to show that we cannot be right all of the time. Part of the human experience is learning things, and we have to give our kids a safe space to learn. And when we do that, when we let them have risk-taking behaviors in an area that's safe, you know, if we let them start to have friendships that are not supervised every single second of the day, it's inevitable. They're going to fight over a toy. They're going to say unkind words to each other. They're going to hurt each other's feelings. And we have to show them a way to make that right. Now, this is all a lot easier said than done. And sometimes if you did not grow up in a dynamic and with a family dynamic that normalized making mistakes and having grace for that, if you make mistakes and you immediately get the questioning of what were you thinking? How could you be so stupid? Honestly, it may be time for you to take a good hard look at that and think, am I saying I'm sorry? Because we often rate ourselves better than we are. And I can think, oh, I'm really good at saying I'm sorry. I'm not afraid to admit that I'm wrong. But if we ask those around us and you get chuckles or wide-eyed stares, well, maybe we're not as good at it as we think we are. So maybe it's time to ask your family, how do you think that I do with apologies? Am I quick to apologize? Do you think that I'm sincere? On a scale from 1 to 10, how quick am I to apologize? How do you think that I'm doing at that? And they'll tell you. And it is really, really hard. Now, when you have an authentic apology, there can be no ifs or buts about it. Really, truly, you cannot say, well, I'm sorry, but. And so much of it depends on our vocal tone. We can say, well, I'm sorry, but you had that coming. I'm sorry, but you did this. There's so often a but you that follows that. And it just automatically is going to shut that other person down because they're going to feel like, okay, you're not really sorry. You're going through the motions, you're saying the words, but you're not really that sorry. And if we're honest, most of us, we were really not taught how to apologize. We were not taught how to sit down and say it and what makes a good apology. Like how you kind of know intuitively, but rarely, I bet most of you didn't have a family workshop session where you sat down and said, okay, what makes a good apology? But just like we want our kids to wear their seatbelt or eat their vegetables, the best way to teach our kids what to do is to model it ourselves. So there's some different elements of an apology. First of all, you want to say, I am sorry. Don't say, I regret, you know, I'm sorry that you felt that way. Just say simply, I am sorry. And then say what it is specifically that you're apologizing for. Say, I'm sorry for hurting your feelings. I'm sorry for not being there when you needed me. I'm sorry for being sharper than I intended to. Show them that you understand how it made them feel. Take ownership of that. And this is so hard because sometimes we think somebody else in the relationship, they own 90% of this, so they should be the ones to apologize. But we still have to own our own behavior, even if it's that 10%. We can't make any excuses, and we want to say why it won't happen again. I'm sorry for whatever that offense is. It won't happen again. I'm going to do my very best to make sure that it doesn't happen again. And if it is appropriate, make a repair. Just say, okay, I'm going to help you clean this up. I'm going to clean this up for you. I will be there for the next time. Whatever it is that I'll pay for this time. Whatever it is that you can, if you can repair that, then do that. That is really important to do. And, you know, this is so hard for parents, but I'll talk about some different situations. Like, what do you do? And what's the difference between a minor offense and a major offense? And should an apology toward a child be approached differently than an apology from adults? I'll also talk about the importance of extending forgiveness and the major effects it has on your health if you don't. You might be really surprised. And we'll talk about the difference between forgiveness and boundaries. In the meantime, I want you to think, is there someone who needs your apology? Maybe today is the day to make that right. I'll see you on the other side of this break.
gracious, slow to anger, abounding in love, good to all. All who call upon you, you will rescue and forgive. This is why I live. You live the life I could never live. You died the death, oh, that I deserve. You rose to life and now you live. That's how you forgive me.
Welcome back, friends. That song is That's How You Forgive, by Shane and Shane. And it comes from Psalm 103, verse 8. The Lord is merciful and gracious, slow to anger, and abounding in steadfast love. And I'm so grateful that God has forgiveness in that way. We are talking about forgiveness today, and I'm answering questions about how and when you should apologize to your kids. We're looking at Ephesians 4, verse 32. Be kind to one another, tender-hearted, forgiving one another, as God in Christ forgave you. And when you look over the course of your life, the mistakes that you've made, the ways that you've hurt people, the ways that we have just fallen and failed, how can we not forgive others? And so asking for and giving forgiveness are really important spiritual disciplines that improve the health of your family. We're talking about giving an apology to your kids, and it's so important to do, even for the little things. Like, let's say you just snap at them. This is probably one of the things that I struggle with the most, just that impatience and the stress builds up inside of me, and they ask me an innocuous question, and I've just had enough. And it's okay to stop right then. As soon as you realize it, get on their eye level and just say, I'm so sorry. I didn't mean to scare you. It's not okay for me to talk to you that way. I'm really trying to be patient, but it's hard. And sometimes I don't do it very well. And it's not something, maybe you would even say, it's not something I learned when I'm growing up, and I'm trying to learn now. And God is helping me to learn that. But even if I'm impatient, even if I'm frustrated, you deserve to be treated with respect and kindness. And I will try my best to be more patient. That is important to say. And there have been some times where I have snapped at my kids in the car, and I have found a safe place to pull over, and I will go and open up that minivan door, because I was a minivan mom back in the day. And I would open up that door and look at my sweet little kid's face, and I would say, listen, I want you to have my whole face. This is important. I need to say I'm sorry for hurting your feelings. Will you please forgive me? And doing it right then. And I find that it's very humbling, because most of the time they're just so quick to forgive. And especially if you establish that habit early on, it's so much easier to do. So just remember to say, I'm sorry for whatever it is specifically that you did. I can see it made you feel this way. I don't want that to happen again. And here's how I want to make it better. Those are the ways to apologize and to help your kids apologize to each other. And sometimes your heart doesn't feel that. But if you will be obedient with your words and your actions, your heart will follow. And that can be easier to do. Now, an apology towards children really should be the same as we approach towards adults. Now, we may be apologizing for different things, but we still need to say, I'm sorry for whatever you did. I can see it made you feel this way. I regret that. And I want to make it better. Will you please forgive me? Asking specifically, will you please forgive me? If you can at least say, I'm sorry for whatever that is, and will you please forgive me? If you could at least start with that, that would be so important and so helpful along the way. Now, one of the things we have to think about on the other side of the spectrum is not overusing the I'm sorry. Some of us grew up in households where you just feel the need to say I'm sorry all the time, whether I just bump into you a little bit as I'm trying to pass you in the kitchen, or I need to ask you to take me somewhere, or things that we really shouldn't say that we're sorry for. Sometimes we just say that all the time, like, I need to watch this show. I'm sorry. Can I have the remote? I'm sorry. Can you pass me my cup? I'm sorry. And we just say, I'm sorry all the time. And so we need to make sure that we're not saying I'm sorry when it's really just, we're just saying it as a filler for our own insecurities. We need to really just say that we're sorry when we are truly sorry. And then that gives, we are asking at the end of that apology, we are asking for forgiveness. Now, forgiveness is basically pardoning someone who has offended us. We're asking them to pardon us. And sometimes people may be asking us for pardon. Now, when we look at the Greek word of forgiveness as it's in the Bible, it means to let go. Like when we're not demanding payment for a debt, when someone owes us something, but we're just saying, you know what? We're going to cancel that debt. You don't owe me anything. And we saw that Jesus used this in the parable of the unmerciful slave in Matthew 18. He also used that when he taught us to pray, forgive us our trespasses as we forgive those who trespass against us. This is transactional. It goes both ways. We ask for forgiveness, but we also extend forgiveness. That is really important. And when we wonder, why do we have to forgive? Well, let's look at Colossians 3:13. We bear with one another. If one has a complaint against another, forgiving each other as the Lord has forgiven you, so you also must forgive. We are not told that we should forgive. Hey, yeah, it's a good practice. We are commanded to forgive those who do wrong to us, even if they're not that person who is asking for forgiveness. And sometimes this can be hard, and this translates in the way that we talk with our kids. But forgiving others is an act of obedience, and we have to forgive, because if we don't, we will grow bitter, we will be resentful, and bitterness and resentment will hurt us way more than it hurts the other person. You've probably heard the old cliche, holding on to unforgiveness is like drinking poison and expecting the other person to die. Now, sometimes the forgiveness that we're wanting to extend is for an offense that is slight. And sometimes it's for something that is really, truly egregious, really, truly awful. But if we hold on to unforgiveness, we know that bitterness causes these health effects. This is according to research. Bitterness actually triggers your body's stress response. It puts you in a chronic state of stress, which puts your body in a chronic state of inflammation. So that's going to do things like increase your heart rate, increase your blood pressure, increase the risk of heart disease and stroke. And we know that, you know, there's so many times in the Bible where God tells us about the impacts of forgiveness on our heart. And he means, yes, our spiritual heart, but also our physical heart. Bitterness is also linked to sleep problems. Bitterness makes it difficult to relax, and you can't go to sleep. You can't stay asleep. And when you're not sleeping well, again, that's going to turn on that chronic stress faucet. It increases the risk of weight gain, of diabetes, of doing worse at school, doing worse at work. And so this is important for us to know, not only for ourselves as parents, if we are harboring unforgiveness, we're damaging our bodies. And it is our job to be as healthy as we can for our kids, because their physical and emotional safety really is very dependent on our health. But this can also hurt our kids. And if we teach our kids to hold on to unforgiveness towards someone else, we see this happening, and they are much more susceptible to negative health effects because their brains are still developing. Bitterness also weakens our immune system. It literally makes you more susceptible to getting sick. It also slows and alters your digestion. It gives you, you know this, because when you're feeling stressed and you're feeling angry and you're feeling resentful, you have got heartburn indigestion, all kinds of things. It also causes muscle tension that can make our spines actually go out of alignment or our other joints go out of alignment. It can also cause headaches. Bitterness increases the likelihood of cancer and other metabolic problems. I mean, it really can absolutely wreck your body. And that is one of the reasons that God commands us to forgive. From Hebrews 12:15, we see the scripture saying, "See to it that no one fails to obtain the grace of God, that no root of bitterness springs up and causes trouble, and by it many become defiled." A root of bitterness. This is what happens when we fail to ask for and offer forgiveness routinely in our homes. When we release that unforgiveness, when we ask for forgiveness, when we are restored quickly in relationship, especially with our kids, it comes with joy and it comes with peace. I mean, those things are so important. Now, let me talk about what forgiveness is not. There are still consequences. There are still boundaries. So it doesn't mean that, okay, yeah, we just canceled that debt. You don't owe me anything. Everything's fine. You can go on acting the way you're acting. You can go on doing what you're doing. And sometimes, especially in that parent-child conflict, our kids are doing something wrong too. But we have to model the way. We have to set the standard by showing them how to apologize and then modeling that so they can take ownership of their behavior. But they're the kids, and it takes them longer to learn something. Most people don't learn how to ride a bike the first time or tie your shoes the first time. But on the other hand, forgiveness doesn't mean just letting somebody have complete access, having no to your relationship, doesn't mean no consequences, no boundaries in life. It's not, okay, we're just not going to talk about this anymore, because especially if something is chronic, then we need to address that. But if you are holding on to that and you are keeping track of the record of wrong and you're using it as to bludgeon the other person, well, you did this, you know that unforgiveness is still there. And listen, in our own strength, we cannot forgive others in the way that we have received God's forgiveness. There is just no way, because we are human and we can be petty. We can be bitter. We can be resentful. We can be angry. And some of you, I know, are angry with your kids. You're angry with the way that your kids have hurt you. Maybe, especially if you have teenagers, if you have young adults or even older adults who are kids, and you feel like they have not appreciated you, they have pushed you out of their life, they don't understand you. We feel that bitterness, and that is separating your relationship. So let me talk about, where do you go from that? What do you do if you need forgiveness in your relationship? And you know, sometimes I even see it in parents with younger kids, because they can be just in a season of struggle, wherever that is, and you just feel constant tension. Well, the first thing that you have to do is just acknowledge those true emotions. You have to say, yeah, this is hard. I am bitter. I am holding on to unforgiveness. I am holding on to resentment. This really hurt me. And sometimes those hurts that we're holding on to, they are real. So we need to acknowledge that and just say, this hurts and I cannot get through it on my own. Then we've got to remember God's forgiveness. So often reminding ourselves of the debt that God forgave when we didn't deserve it, because we don't deserve it. Not one of us deserves it. It can help us forgive others. If we have been forgiven so much, how can we not extend forgiveness? I think about the verse that says, if God gave up his son for us, how will he not, along with those, graciously give us all things, including the power to forgive? And then thinking on our biblical command, knowing that we must do this. We are taught this in the Lord's Prayer, to forgive others our trespasses as we forgive those who trespass against us. And then we've got to let it go. And really, the enemy doesn't want you to let it go. The enemy is going to replay that offense over and over in your mind, is going to tell you, don't let go. Don't, no, that person was wrong, and it's so tempting, but we've got to let it go. And sometimes it's a dynamic process. Sometimes we let it go, and then all of a sudden we grab it back and we want to hold on to it just a little bit longer. And that's okay. That's okay. We recognize that and we let it go. If you stand before God with open hands, that means you're not holding on to anything too tightly, but your hands are also open to receive the blessings that God has given you. And even more than we're commanded to forgive people, we are commanded to love our enemies and pray for those who persecute you. And your children are far from your enemies, but we are commanded to love in that way. And we know that God promises that we can do everything through His power, that He will work all things together for good for those who love Him and are called according to His purpose. I know it's really, really hard, but when we come back, I'm going to talk specifically about some strategies that you can do if you are in a season of conflict with your kid. If you're fighting all the time, do you feel miserable? Are you just exhausted from the conflict? I'm going to give you 3 lifelines to help you in a season of conflict. Don't go away. We'll be right back. Welcome back, friends. That song is Forgiveness by Matthew West. And maybe forgiveness is the last thing on your mind today, but it's the first thing on my mind. We're talking about 52 Habits for Healthy Families. It is Ask Dr. Nurse Mama Friday, and I'm answering questions I've had from families about the healthy habit of asking for and granting forgiveness in your family. We're meditating on Ephesians 4, chapter 32, be kind to one another, tenderhearted, forgiving one another as God in Christ forgave you. And when I look at the landscape of what kids are facing today, they're facing cancel culture, but they're also facing an environment in which they're more likely to make mistakes. When they have a phone, a smartphone, or social media, they have underdeveloped character to handle the overexposure of those devices. And many times they will make mistakes. And I see kids saying things to each other on social media through text message that they would never in a million years say to each other in person. And this is another reason why we need to teach them the discipline of asking for and granting forgiveness. Because every child, we know, every child will make a mistake at some point, and they need to have a group of friends and a family who is going to help them cultivate forgiveness. We can do that by modeling it to them in a world that honestly is very unforgiving to kids who make mistakes and to people who make mistakes. Often it can be. But when we harbor that unforgiveness, like I've been sharing with you, that is a state of chronic stress that literally destroys your physical heart and your health while it devours your soul. We see this in the Old Testament story of Ruth. Her mother-in-law, Naomi, experiences the loss of her husband. And the Bible tells us that she chooses bitterness, even to the point of changing her name to Mara, which literally means bitter. I mean, this is a woman who was dedicated to saying, I am, my identity is bitter. I have experienced what is unfair, and I will hereforth be known as bitter from now on. Now, her daughter-in-law, Ruth, experienced similar loss, and actually, you could argue, worse in some ways. But she chose blessing over bitterness, and she was given, through her kinsman redeemer Boaz, you probably know the story, a baby who became the grandfather of King David and is in the line of Jesus. And when the baby's born, the most beautiful picture of restoration is painted. I can't imagine what kind of impact Ruth had on her mother-in-law, because we sometimes miss this point in the story. Because after Ruth has Boaz, Mara changes her name back to Naomi. How powerful must that be? That's the power that we have in those family relationships and in modeling what choosing blessing over bitterness looks like. And listen, we serve a God who knows what this is like. He's been betrayed. Jesus was betrayed. He was abandoned. He was betrayed to death by a kiss and abandoned by his closest companions at his most vulnerable in the Garden of Gethsemane. And his hurt and anguish was so great over this that he sweated drops of blood. But he forgave this betrayal, and he personally restored Peter. After Peter denied him three times, he restored him three times. And this is the person, this is the man, this is the God who is instructing us to forgive. So when we think, but you don't understand, no, you don't know what I've been through. No, maybe I don't, but Jesus does. He does understand what you've been through. And sometimes that can be really hard, and it just portrays itself in conflict, especially between parents and kids. So let me talk to you and give you three lifelines, like I promised, if you're weary from conflict in your home. Maybe it's with your spouse, maybe it's your mother-in-law, maybe it's your kids. But listen, especially if it's your kids, here's the first lifeline. You might feel that you are just battling all the time, because instead of choosing your battles, you're choosing every battle. When bitterness and anger rises up within you, you feel so triggered to go to war all the time, and you really need to choose your battles. So when you're thinking about that contentious relationship with whoever it is that you have, I want you to right now think of the top three priorities that you have in that relationship. What are the non-negotiables? What are the things that you absolutely are not going to compromise on? It might be rules you have with your kids, rules you have with your other extended family members. It might be values that you have. What are those non-negotiables? Commit to be consistent and going to the mat for those things every way, every time. And you know what? That family member will start to understand in time, these are the things that are most important to me. These are my values. These are my core values. And focusing can make that relationship seem so much more manageable. Because when you're upset with someone and you're just harping on absolutely everything, feeling like a failure all the time, whether it's your spouse, your kids, that is really discouraging. And you know what? It makes both of you want to give up. So intentionally let the rest go. You cannot fix every relationship problem at once. So is this a season in your child's life where maybe you let the messy room just go? And maybe they are making their grades, you're not as happy with those. Maybe you just let that go. Where in your relationship can you find space to create grace and some space to breathe, just to breathe? Honestly, it is really, really difficult. Just choose those three things and then try to create some space. So that's number one, choose your battles. Number two, respond in conflict with active listening. You cannot lecture your way to leverage behavioral change. You cannot argue your way into right relationship. So try something radically different. tell whoever that is that you're in conflict with, I'm interested in what you have to say. I really want to hear your perspective. You can be honest with them and say, this is really hard for me. Please give me some grace as I'm trying to listen because I feel really frustrated or I feel really hurt. And ask them, what am I not understanding in this situation? How am I not hearing you? Please help me understand. Then listen with your face. Make your hands empty. Keep a neutral facial expression. Don't scoff. Don't roll your eyes. Don't sigh. Don't, you know, just make any kind of verbalization. Don't cross your arms, cross your legs, you know, just whatever other body posture that's going to create some distance there. And if they say something that makes you angry, that hurts you, try not to respond with words immediately. Tell them you need some, tell them thank you for sharing. You need some space to think about what they said, and you'll come back to them later when you've had a chance to think about it. So number one, be intentional about choosing your battles. Number two, respond to conflict with active listening, because so often we just want to charge in with our words and we want to run over the other person. And we think the more forceful that we say them, the more emotion that we insert, the more adamant we are, then they will understand us. And that never, ever works. Never. So number three, circle back intentionally when your emotions have cooled down. Help them name and claim those emotions by first naming and claiming yours. Say, earlier, when I was listening, when we were talking, I was frustrated, I was angry, I was hurt, whatever it was. And then say, you were disrespectful. Maybe that you have to say that to your kids. I feel unheard. Let's try again. Now, especially for those teen years, emotional outburst literally impair teen brain executive function. They literally impair their ability and disrupt their communication, those connections that they need, the neural communications that they need to communicate rationally. So sometimes you do have to give some space so those connections can repair themselves so that they can have some rational thinking. And you might be expecting a response from someone they are not physically capable of giving. So you have to have some grace in that. You might write a letter or have a text conversation where you can think very carefully about what you're saying and take some time to reflect. And once you find that common ground, move the conversation to an in-person one so that you can talk about it. And give yourself grace and space to grow and learn in this season. And instead of picturing each battle as a defeat, like this was a war, I lost or I won or no one won, I want you to instead picture a plant that you are watering with expectations of growth. Maybe that plant is really wilted and pitiful looking, but it needs to be nurtured. And it can be nurtured with you trying your best to think carefully about your words. Our words matter. What we say matters. It sticks with our family so deeply. You may have heard the phrase, sticks and stones may break my bones, but words can never harm me. That is actually a lie. That is not true at all. The truth is that sticks and stones may break our bones, but words can ruin our heart and soul forever. And I'm sure it wouldn't be difficult for you to think of something that someone has said to you in your past that is really hurtful. And you carry those words with you, and you have carried them for a long time. And maybe they don't even know. They said something thoughtless and they're not suffering, but you're suffering. The good news is we can carry words of life with us too. So how are we going to deliver words of affirmation straight to the hearts of our families? Delivering those words of affirmation, building up that relationship, it gives you cushion in the times where you do have conflict and makes forgiveness so much easier. But if your relationship is already contentious, it's hard. It's really, really hard. I want to ask you, were you ever in an elementary class or a junior high class or maybe a church function or maybe even a work building, you know, team building exercise where everyone writes something nice about you and then you see that paper? Many of you may even still have something like that. And you see the words that people say, and it is just like a balm to your soul when you think, oh, that's what people think about me? I know I have some of those papers from when I was growing up. And you can create that for your family. You have the opportunity to go to people who that you love in your family and give them messages of life to combat those words that are hurtful and hopeless. You can nurture a safe space for your family to share their heart and their emotions. I encourage you to be intentional in the affirmations that you deliver and be specific in that. And that can be really, really powerful, especially when you're delivering an apology. I know that you must think, I think this of you, and I don't. I want you to know, I don't think you're selfish. I think you're incredibly unselfish. And I think that maybe you struggled here, but here are all the wonderful things that I see about you. It's a great way to build relationships with your family. And the word that we keep hearing over and over again is unprecedented. And truth be told, we all hate that word now, along with other words I'm sure you could name that are just indicators of our cultural time. But in a world that seems so completely turned upside down, where we're constantly bombarded by bad news, death, disease, rioting, war, all of these things that just seem so unimaginable a short time ago, it seems like the only thing that is certain is uncertainty. But I want to be certain for my kids. And even though it doesn't seem like it, your children, your spouse is listening intently to every word you say. And they are listening for words you say about them. And more importantly than what they're listening, they are believing what you say. And our families need to see the confidence that we have in them, that a behavioral struggle doesn't translate to a character flaw. So did you fail yesterday or today? Have you spoken words you regret? Do you have moments you weren't at your best? Did you give up when you should have pressed in? Were you impatient? We can say that we are sorry. And in the words of the apparently immortal Toby Mac, because can we agree he is not aged like the rest of us? He still looks so young. But he said, we lose our way. We get back up again. It's never too late to get back up again. One day you're going to shine again. You may be knocked down, but not out forever. That's because God's compassions never fail. His mercies are new every morning. So I challenge you to make asking for and receiving forgiveness a healthy habit in your home. May the Lord bless you and keep you and make his face shine on you. And I'll see you again on Monday.
The views and opinions expressed in this broadcast may not necessarily reflect those of the American Family Association or American Family Radio.